Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
They asked me what I wanted to major in, and I was like, oh, I'll probably go into engineering. And they just looked at me and they're like, you, an engineer? Like, it was just almost that these two personality traits can't go together.
Showing up, wanting to do your hair and your makeup and wear a cute outfit. I think sometimes people can have a skewed perception of how seriously you'll take something or how qualified you are to understand a subject.
You know, people look at you unprofessional if you don't wear makeup. And then on the other hand, it's like you wear too much and then you're also looked at in a different light.
I think what I'm really proud of now is when I show up to present the company at a pitch competition or something, I don't dial it down. I don't try to look too serious, or like people have said, maybe you should do like less colorful makeup. And I'm like, no, this is who I am.
Oh, hey guys. Welcome back to La Talk with Lavi. As you guys know, I like to switch it up between my individual, like, therapy sessions, I like to call them, of anything I really just want to get loud about that week, loud thoughts, all of that. And then with a guest episode, someone that I, you know, love their story, founders in the industry, just amazing people that I want to get loud with and really dive deeper on their story. And today we have amazing guests that I'm so excited to have on and just to learn more about their journey. A female founder of an amazing biotech beauty company. Her brand is actually called Biotech Beauty, and it's really that first brand that is really taking a new approach to skin safe makeup. Not only skin safe makeup, but makeup that actually does something for your skin and isn't just a makeup product with a few skincare ingredients in there. She is a STEM major, worked in the industry, and then really took it upon herself to make a change and take down those walls of beauty standards, not only in how makeup is produced and trialed and tested before put on the market, but also on how it's shown, perceived, and how it's being used, not as a tool to cover up or as a chore, a mask, but actually something that empowers your confidence and enhances your features. So it's really, really aligned with everything the Loud Talk page and my pages stand for. So I'm really excited to have her on. Hope you guys enjoy this episode. If you're not watching on YouTube, make sure to go to the Loud Talk with Lavi YouTube channel so you can actually see the video version of our whole conversation. But if you are listening in on Apple, Spotify, or any streaming platform on your commute, maybe to work or school, or you're just, you know, getting loud with us today, thank you for being here. I love you so much. And let's get right on into this episode. And more importantly, let's get loud. It's time to get loud. Welcome back to Loud Talk with Lavi, a podcast where we break down the walls of beauty standards one flaw at a time. And today I have a very special guest. Please give a warm welcome to Alana Tran. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm such a huge fan of your content, so it's an honor to be here.
Thank you so much. I love everything you're doing in the beauty space, and it's just so empowering to see, like, you know, women not only like in the STEM field, but then also break into beauty in a new light. And I was just really excited to have you on because I feel like your brand and everything it stands for really aligns with what this podcast and my future stand for. So I'm really excited to chat and everything like that. Let's just dive right into it. I feel like you've had many, many lives. So like looking at like a little bit of researching your story, you know, you went from like content creator to a STEM major to now cosmetic founder, marketing manager, like all of these things. Walk me through that journey. And along those stages, was your end goal always this when you were younger, or did you find yourself kind of bouncing from one thing to the next?
Yeah. So as a kid, I was always curious and experimenting. I think some of my earliest memories of doing cosmetic formulation was when I would do like egg yolk, mayo, avocado, hair masks and face masks. And I knew that I loved experimenting and creating things. And it took me to the point of, at some point, I even won the Texas State science fair.
Oh my
So at the time,
gosh.
I was a big nerd, still am a big nerd. But at the time, I didn't really have a clear vision of becoming a beauty entrepreneur, but I knew that I loved the process of discovery and creation. So as I grew older, my career path became more personal because I struggled with pretty bad acne as a teenager, and that was challenging not just physically, but emotionally. And I fell into this toxic cycle of masking my redness and texture with makeup that often contributed to worse, painful cystic acne. And so that left me feeling stuck. And that's what made me hyper aware of the lack of truly skin supportive, science-backed makeup on the market. So fast forward to when I was majoring in human biology at UC Berkeley, and I started to learn how to approach problems systematically. And when I eventually stepped into the world of marketing and product development at Biossance and L'Oreal, I started to see how I could bridge my passions for science and my love for beauty and color. So each step in my journey was like piecing together a puzzle piece that would eventually become Biotech Beauty. And now, as a founder of Biotech Beauty, I feel incredibly fortunate to channel both the scientific rigor and the creative experimentation that shaped my upbringing into products that truly serve people. And beauty to me is no longer just about surface level appearance, it's about creating tools for long-term confidence backed by science and integrity. So it feels really exciting and full circle to take those childhood moments of experimentation and turn them into something that has the potential to transform lives.
This episode is brought to you by our sponsor, 9to5 Skin, which also happens to be my beauty brand. And let me tell you, one of the biggest misconceptions about acne is that it is a hygiene issue. And you'd think when 80% of the world struggles with it, this would be more talked about. But the issue is the beauty industry has trained our minds into frantically buying every single product we see online with these crazy, unrealistic before and afters that tell you this one product will completely clear your skin. And not only that, it's gonna take away every pore, every scar, and transform your skin in a matter of a few weeks. I don't view skincare like that. I was sick of seeing real skin not being represented, and I was like, you know what? Let me just do it myself. This is 9to5 Skin, where we only show real skin, real results, because skincare at the end of the day is a supplement. It should be helping your skin along the process, no matter where your skin's at in the journey. I struggle with hormonal acne, and these are products that just help me in my day to day, make me feel good in my skin. And before you say anything, this is not just another influencer founded brand. My name is Lavinia, and I'm a fully 100% self-funded brand. We're doing things a little bit differently over here, non-traditional, and bringing a little bit of my engineered solution to skincare, like Spray Away. It's our best calming yet hydrating mist. I wanted to pull together my experience as a content creator for the past 10 years, where I've tested out hundreds, if not thousands, of products with my background in chemical engineering and business to create a brand that doesn't make you feel like something immediately needs to be fixed. I wanted 9to5 to be that brand. When you pick up the products, you instantly feel more confident in your skin, because hating your skin into healing is not possible. We need to focus on skincare that promotes progress over perfection. Of course, we're keeping our products affordable and accessible. And from one acne prone girly to another, remember to tell yourself something you love about your skin today and shop 9to5 at 9to5skin.com. Again, you can find all of our products at 9to5skin.com, and our 4-piece bundle is $20 off. You heard me, whole $20 off. You can get the full 4-piece set. Amazing. Wow, like you just have such an amazing story, and I'm so excited to dive deeper into that. I feel like even just you talking about how you were kind of a nerd, like growing up and like really into the science and stuff, I can relate to that so much. And like, quick question, did you ever feel like you were maybe judged from being more of like a glam girl and then also really into the science? I feel like there's some stigma there. I kind of received that growing up. I remember a teacher of mine, as an example, when I was in high school, they asked me like what I wanted to go into. And I was like the girl who was coming to school, like heels, full glam makeup. Like I just have always been such a girly girl. And they asked me what I wanted to major in, and I was like, oh, I'll probably go into engineering. And they just looked at me and they're like, you an engineer? Like, it was just almost that these two personality traits can't go together. What's your thoughts
right.
on that?
Yeah, I think that can be incredibly frustrating. I did also face that in college. I have this one very vivid experience of the graduate student instructor asking me if I was taking this class for fun, because I was struggling. It was biochemistry. It was
right.
really challenging for me. He was like, so are you just, you taking this as an elective? You're just curious? I'm like, no, like, why wouldn't you ask anyone else in this class? This is for my major, just like everyone else in class. So I think, yeah, showing up, you know, with wanting to do your hair and your makeup and wear a cute outfit, I think sometimes people can have a skewed perception of how seriously you'll take something or how qualified you are to understand a subject. But I think What I'm really proud of now is this is why when I show up to do talks or present the company at a pitch competition or something, I don't dial it down. I don't try to look too serious, or like people have said, maybe you should do like less colorful makeup or wear like a more serious pantsuit. And I'm like, no, this is who I am. And I think that's really inspiring for people to see that you can be, exactly who you want to show up as and have all of the characteristics of something that maybe you didn't see in the role model growing up.
Totally, because I think there's that, the double-edged sword in a way. Because I we used to get a lot of questions like, how do you show up to work like in a corporate job setting, showing your acne because people look at you unprofessional if you don't wear makeup. And then on the other hand, it's like you wear too much or you do too much in the beauty space, and then you're also looked at in a different light. And I think for me, coming from that content creator role, some people, took that as like unprofessional. And I remember when I applied for my first corporate job, I was really debating, do I put that I'm a YouTuber on my resume or not? 'Cause I was like, I don't know how this might look to this like huge company in the oil and gas field, very like more conservative side. Like I was like, how will this look? And I was like, you know what? I'm gonna put it on there because I've been doing this forever. I feel like it really shows my experience. And I remember entering the interview and I thought, they would ask more like technical, like chem eng questions. The first question the manager asked me was, tell me about your YouTube channel and how you've like grown that and the brands you've worked with. And I was like, wow, like, you just have to talk to the right people and the people that value and see that side of you. But yeah, I think it's so interesting and kind of breaking down that stigma of like, you can, be a glam girly and still like beauty and brains, right? Like, I think it goes
Totally.
together and it's not something that we should hide. I want to dive deeper into your childhood. So you told me you were really into like science stuff as a kid, but did you always know that you wanted to pursue something in beauty or entrepreneurship? Did that kind of come about like through your education?
Yeah, it came about a bit later. When I was in college, I was pre-med. I was really set on becoming a doctor, as both
Okay,
of my
well.
parents were doctors. And it wasn't until I think end of my junior year when I spoke to my dad and I was like, okay, I know I love the science. I love learning all these subjects. I don't see myself putting on like a doctor's coat and going into a hospital and doing that day to day. And he actually referenced at the time I was a content creator. He was like, well, he watched all my YouTube videos. He was like, I watch your YouTube videos. He was like, you love makeup. You love talking about formulas and the science behind them and educating on that. Why don't you do something in beauty? And at the time, I didn't even know what careers were possible in beauty. And so I was really fortunate. There was one club at UC Berkeley called Aurum Cosmetics, and it was a very small club dedicated to students who wanted to pursue a career in the industry. So they would bring in guest speakers and do cosmetic formulation and networking so that we could get exposure to the industry and just see what kinds of opportunities are out there. So at this time, I knew I loved the process of discovery. I loved development of formulas, but I didn't know exactly how to get into it. And so through this club, I ended up getting my first internship, which was at Biossance. And that's how I did my first product development role in clean skincare. And then I learned as much as I could there about product development and marketing. And then I moved over to L'Oreal. I did 2 years of global product marketing at NYX Cosmetics. And that's where I learned how to balance color and artistry with science in consumer-facing communications. So all of these experiences together gave me the confidence to bring methodical creativity to the beauty industry and set the foundation for creating biotech beauty down the road.
That is so cool. I love hearing that journey because I feel like that is something that, like that club you mentioned, is something that I would have loved to see at my university. As I mentioned right before we started recording, my chem eng experience was very oil and gas based just because of like the city I live in, and that's the route a lot of people take. And I always felt like, yeah, that part of beauty is not really talked about as much, but obviously you need people with science backgrounds in the cosmetic development world. And
Yeah.
not only in just the development world, but even on the marketing side and stuff, like understanding what goes behind a product is important when marketing it. That is so cool. So along that journey, on your internship and then at your tier position at L'Oreal, was that when you started kind of thinking, okay, I want to do something on my own? What kind of sparked that for you?
Yeah. I mean, I loved all of the pieces that I learned at Biossance and L'Oreal. So I loved understanding how biotechnology could power sustainable skincare innovation at Biossance. And I loved learning how to create formulas with high impact color and a brand with personality at NYX Cosmetics. And the challenge was a lot of the products that I would develop or market, I couldn't actually wear because they would cause me to break out or sensitize my skin. And so actually, when I graduated with my master's and I was considering maybe moving to a new role to expand and learn even more, what I was looking for was a company that made makeup that was truly good for the skin. And I had this degree in marketing, so I was like, let me find another company that's doing this and I'll do marketing for them. And as I looked around, I discovered that no brand was creating truly skin-improving makeup at the level that I knew was possible. So what we're kind of seeing is the general skinification of makeup, where everyone's like, this one has hyaluronic acid, this one is clean, but there was no clinical trials to back it up. It's not as rigorously tested and substantiated as it is for skincare, when with all of my experience, I knew it could be. So that's when I decided to take the leap and fill this white space in the market for people like me, because literally all the girls in my friend group, all of my sisters and cousins have the same challenge where we love glam. We love going on a night out and doing like a nice heavy contour, blush. Like, we love playing with color, but we'll break out for the next 2 weeks afterwards. So I think that was when I decided I could fill this really apparent gap in the market, and I knew I had all the skills to do it.
That is such a cool journey. I feel like you definitely, had the eye to like see an issue in the industry and be like, okay, I'm gonna try and fix it and look into it. And I think you're so right that, there has been a bit of the hybridization of makeup and skincare, but it is kind of like, be a foundation with SPF and niacinamide or something like that. But then there's not that deeper look into it. And I think from the consumer side, you're not really, you see that print on the packaging and you're gonna take it as like, oh, this is like skincare and makeup in one, but it might not be doing what it should be or what you're hoping that it would for your skin. You mentioned your master's in marketing. Were you like always very academic growing up? And what made you kind of pursue these career paths, degree paths in not only STEM, but then also marketing later down the line?
Yeah, I was pretty academic growing up. Like I said, I was a nerd. I was like science fair winner, spelling bee champion. I just loved to learn, and I loved to apply my brain. But my academic journey wasn't as linear as it might seem. I think now that I've created Biotech Beauty, it makes sense because all of the pieces have a piece to play. But it felt very nonlinear, and it's a lot of points scary for me because I just didn't know what the next step was. So starting pre-med in college, inspired by my parents, I knew that I wanted something to do with science and helping people. But as I progressed, I knew that it wasn't traditional medicine, but more in the intersection of science and creativity and problem solving. So with the undergrad studies giving me that understanding of biology and chemistry and the science of skin, I spent hours in the lab conducting experiments and immersing myself in formulation science, which kind of planted the seeds for what would later become Biotech Beauty. And after undergrad, I realized that having technical knowledge wasn't enough for the kinds of, creation I wanted to do in beauty. So I wanted to connect with people and create products that truly resonate. And so that's when I decided to pursue a master's in marketing. And that was a really eye-opening experience for me. As someone who came from a very technical STEM background, I hadn't taken really any courses in business or marketing or anything like that. So this was my first foray into understanding consumer behavior and product development and crafting compelling narratives that make these complex scientific ideas more accessible and engaging to everyday consumers. So, bringing these worlds together, science and marketing, has been instrumental in building Biotech Beauty because it's allowed me to create products that are not only innovative and effective, but also deeply aligned with what consumers want and need. So, my academic journey wasn't just about earning degrees, it was about uncovering a way to channel my curiosity and skills into something impactful. And it's been incredibly rewarding to use that foundation to solve real problems for makeup lovers like me, turning acne struggles into an opportunity for empowerment and confidence.
Totally. And I love that you talked about that it wasn't a linear journey and that you didn't exactly know the next step. I think that's really refreshing to hear because, I think people in their 20s or even high school look at people down the line in their career and think, okay, wow, they have it all figured out. They knew like they need to do this degree and then this to get to where they are. And as you mentioned, your original plan was to go down the medical path and potentially become a doctor. So it really just shows sometimes life sends different curveballs and it really just depends what path you want to go down. You mentioned your parents and the influence they had on you in wanting to go into medicine, but then also the support from your dad when you were a content creator. Do you feel like that support really, really helped you be okay with, okay, I'm leaving maybe this more traditional route in my career and going down a more entrepreneurial route? Because I feel like sometimes that's where people struggle is like that parental pressure of like, am I taking a huge risk by trying to do something on my own or something that's different and not going down the traditional traditional path?
Absolutely. I think I am very fortunate in that support from my parents to take a risk and depart from a traditional path felt very freeing to me. Definitely that was the main thing that was holding me back, was like, I don't want to disappoint my parents. What if this was their dream for me? And it was really very kind of emotional thinking about it, but it was very exciting for me, hearing my dad saying, like, my dream for you is to do what makes you happy and to create what you think you were, put here. So it was never about like you have to be a doctor. It was more about like what are you doing with the resources you have to create something. So that was really a relief for me. I think the secondary challenge that I felt was perceived pressure from peers. I'm like, what are people going to think? Are they going to think I wasn't smart enough? I think you might have experienced this, where it's like, if you have these technical degrees that you've just completed and you're a content creator, maybe you sometimes feel like people are going to judge you for not being able to handle a high pressure job or a 9 to 5, when in reality, it is a lot more challenging to carve your own path and be your own boss in some ways. So I think that was the secondary aspect. And I was, again, so grateful that all of my friends were such an amazing support network for me. And they were like, we believe in anything you're going to do. You're going to create something amazing. Like, really dig into the fact that you are different. You are the glam girly. You are the girl that shows up to discussion sections and labs wearing full glam. And this is the path that's meant for you. So I think it was really helpful that not only my family, but the people I surrounded myself with were so supportive of me taking this leap.
I love hearing that. I feel like similarly, I always had very supportive like parents, and then we both talked about like our siblings before this, of like just having that like family support at the core. But I do think that pressure I felt, and I'm feeling actually right now, because I just mentioned to you, like I just graduated literally yesterday, so I've been out of classes for about 5 months, and I'm feeling that pressure of like, okay, are people perceiving me different because I am taking a different path? Or, most of the people that knew me in my life knew that I was very academic, had these high grades and took my degree careers very, very seriously. But I'm like, okay, well, people I meet in the future perceive me differently since I'm just a content creator. And kind of that notion of what you mentioned there, like, is she choosing this path because she can't handle the pressure of a different path? And I've had so many people ask me, like, aren't you going to go get a real job? And kind of that notion. And I think, like you said, the reason sometimes those pressures or questions or judgment, even from people, comes up is because at the end of the day, you are going against the norm. And I think people see this linear path of, you get good grades in high school, whatever, you get a good degree, and then you get a good stable job. And that's the path that a lot of people take. And there's nothing wrong with that. But also, if you know that that path isn't necessarily for you and won't spark you joy and, creativity and create that drive within you, it's okay to go down a different path and know you want to take a more entrepreneurial stance on your own. But there is that pressure, because it's all on you, and people will sometimes judge because you are going against the norm. But I'm happy to hear you had a lot of support in your inner circles. Do you have any advice for someone who's maybe in that situation and doesn't feel support, maybe not just from their family, but a peer or a friend, or maybe someone they went to school with who maybe is taking a more traditional path?
Yeah, I mean, I would say remember that your life is your own after some time, right? Like, of course, you have the judgment from your family, or like you want approval from your friends, but the person that's going to have to live with your decisions for the rest of your life is you. And so if you feel strongly called to something, or even if you just feel that the path you're on is not right, you don't have to continue on that. You don't have to know what the end goal is, but you can try something different. And it's really just a series of baby steps and trying different things. And each experience will inform you of, okay, hey, I like this direction, or actually, that wasn't great. I'm going to try something else. And you're going to keep building your repertoire. And there's no such thing as wasted time. Everything will just continue to compound and make you that very unique person that I think is a superpower. And like you mentioned, when you're going into your oil and gas interviews and they actually want to ask you about your experience as a content creator, I think that's what makes people so special, is whenever you use all of your differences as your superpowers. Because if we follow a linear path, there's a pretty good understanding. If you go into an interview, you know all of the technical things that they are expecting of you. They looked at your resume, they know. What's going to make you stand out from everyone else who's applying is these, extracurricular or non-traditional interests that you take that make you a multifaceted person. So if you're unsure of what path to take, I think that's so exciting. That means you have a world of possibilities of things to try that can be making you so different than everyone else.
Totally. And I think the, whole idea of I have so many opportunities, which one do I take? But then there's also such blessing in having so many opportunities to choose from. And I think, you know, we look at maybe our parents' generation where it was more like you get a job and you retire in that job and that's kind of the path you take. Whereas I think we live in a world now where you can kind of go from one job to the next, gain that experience and really create your own path in a way. And like you even went into industry, that typical 9-to-5 job, and then went more entrepreneurial. And I always had the notion too that I'm going to really give this a good shot of like trying my own thing and building it. And the industry will always be there. I can always go back to a traditional job, you know? And I think sometimes we think our decisions are so permanent and we think, you know, if I take this one job or if I don't, I try this, like it's the end of the world. But, you know, when you look back at life, you realize, okay, nothing was as permanent or as serious as it seems. And, you know, most decisions you make, you can usually, you know, revert from or try something different. And like you mentioned too, there's no lost opportunity because even if you try something, it doesn't work. What did you gain out of it experience wise? Or maybe you tried a job you didn't like and you that is still value that you didn't like it because now you know going forward. So I think, yeah, a lot of that pressure, like you even mentioned, can be, yes, from the outside, but a lot of it is in our own heads. And I love that you mentioned that we have to remind ourselves that it is our own life, because at the end of the day, like you mentioned, we have to live with him. We are the ones gonna be going to work and back and putting in the work, and you have to be satisfied with that in yourself. But it is definitely hard to navigate still. You know, people play influence in our lives, but having those conversations. And I remember even for me, my parents were always very supportive of like my journey as a creator and stuff. But I remember, I think it's similar in the States, but in Canada, once you finish an engineering degree, you're an engineer in training. You do 4 years at a company, 3 to 4 years, depending if you did an internship, and then you become a professional engineer and you get your PEng, it's called. So I remember I was talking to my mom, and at the end of our degrees, in Canada, we get what's called an iron ring that you wear, like it's part of your loyalty to the field and everything like that. And I remember telling her how this conversation came up. Oh yeah, so she was like, oh, when your brother graduates from engineering, you can be the one to give him his ring because you'll be a PEng. And I was like, oh, I don't think I'm going for my PEng. And she started crying, because not because it wasn't what she wanted me to do, but she just, I think, had this mental image of like, this is the path you're going down. And she just felt like, oh, you've put in all these years of work, like why not just put in 3 more and get your PEng? But I told her, well, mom, like that means I'd have to go get a 9-to-5 job. You know, that would slow down my content career too. These are opportunities that I have now, not later. And if I then leave the industry, I'd lose my PEng within a year of not using it anyway. So explaining that to her made her really realize. And she's like, oh, yeah, it's total logical sense. And sometimes all it takes is like a conversation of setting those expectations and really explain to someone why you're going down a certain path. If there's someone in your life that you value and care about, because at the end of the day, there's going to be people who have opinions that aren't really adding value and they're just adding their opinion in. But yeah, I did want to, obviously, you've talked about biotech beauty and how it fills in the gaps and a lot of what the beauty space is missing. And I do want to get into that more, but I want to ask you, like you've mentioned, you know, you've always been a glam girly and stuff, but what does makeup really mean to you? And how does it really play into your confidence and self-image? Because I feel like a lot of times people use makeup in the way of, oh, I have to put on makeup, and it kind of becomes this chore of like, I need to cover myself up to present a certain way. So what does that really mean for you? And did you have a journey yourself where maybe you went from viewing makeup in that negative light to maybe a more positive light later down the line?
Yeah, ex that's exactly how it was
Yeah.
for me, actually. Makeup used to be a mask for me. I remember I was in college and I was talking to my friends about how it felt so anxiety-inducing to go onto campus without makeup. I'm like, if everyone sees me on class or they've seen me on Instagram looking a certain way, and then, you know, I'm rolling out of bed for an 8 a.m. and I look completely different, what does that mean? If my skin's broken out, like I didn't want to have that dissonance. And so there was this whole period of my life where I felt like I had to hide behind my makeup. And that was obviously very toxic. And a part of it was because the makeup was bad for my skin. It ended up ruining my skin. And I had to pretty much always have it on to feel like I could show up as the most confident version of myself. But over time, especially as I've started to find products that are non-comedogenic and I've developed biotech beauty to help heal my skin as I wear makeup, it has now become a way to celebrate individuality and my unique features. And still take control of how I show up in the world. But instead of as a mask, it's more of as creatively. And how do I want to feed into my confidence so that, you know, I can show up on this podcast and be excited about, you know, the cute red color of my cheeks or, you know, like the contour around my face. So I think I realized over time, makeup should never feel like a trade-off between confidence and skin health. And that's why I started Biotech Beauty, to create products that not only enhance our natural beauty, but actively care for our skin. So as we wear it, it doesn't feel like we're hiding. It feels more of an act of self-care. And long term, we're embracing and celebrating all of our unique features while feeling good in our own skin.
I love that. And as a, okay, so that's more your journey as a makeup wearer, but then now as a brand founder, how do you navigate that line between, producing makeup that people use to enhance their features and not pushing those beauty standards further?
Yeah, I think about striking that balance constantly. At Biotech Beauty, our focus is on celebrating individuality rather than pushing one narrow idea of beauty. And we do this with so many pillars of our brand. So first, we ensure that all of our products work for all skin types by clinically testing our products on all skin tones and types, meaning acne prone, sensitive, normal, oily, all of the above, and making sure that they truly work for everyone. So if we say it's universal and it's designed for everyone, we've actually backed it up. And then beyond that, we champion representation in everything we do, from our campaign imagery showcasing, multiple genders and skin tones, to the creators we collaborate with and share on our socials. And the most important thing for me from the get-go was hiring a diverse team to ensure that all of our product development and marketing reflected a variety of perspectives and looks and definitions of beauty so that we could make sure that that manifested in every communication and every product decision we made. So for me, makeup is about giving people tools to enhance their features in a way that feels authentic to them. So we're never going to push this idea of a perfect look or perfect features. It's just about giving you tools to be creative and express yourself and show up as the most confident version of yourself.
I love that so much. I mean, I think the biggest thing is I always talk about this. I feel like in the last few years, we've kind of lost the plot of like makeup just being fun. And, yes, it's a tool. And obviously, there's hacks and stuff. I always talk about this, like ways to make the skin look a bit smoother, reduce redness and stuff. But at the end of the day, it should be fun. And once it's not fun anymore, like, you need something to like spark that fun in it again, like whether it's trying on a new look or adding some color, as we've talked about. And, yeah, there shouldn't feel that pressure of like, oh, I need to wear this today, or it's more of that want and enhancing your features. And I love that. I stand for the same thing. So love that so much. I do want to dive into the brand a bit more because you talked about, growing your team and all of that. So walk me through like kind of the journey of Biotech Beauty from like day one of like conceptualization. Did you start this fully on your own, and where has it grown to today?
Yeah, so I did start fully on my own. I am a solo founder, and I guess day one for me looked like sitting right here in this chair and opening a OneNote, which if you looked at it, it's insane. It's an endless OneNote of just a numbered bullet list. I think it's probably at like number 600 by now, but I just sat down and ideated, if I'm going to create this ideal makeup brand that's good for your skin, what are all of the things I need to do to make it work? And just line by line, it's like number one, choose a brand name. Number two, trademark it. Number three, come up with a product brief. Like every single itty bitty thing that needed to get done, I wrote it down. And then I eventually turned it into a timeline. So that's how I started kind of doing my own project management and product development timelines. And slowly, it's just every day, check off as many things as I can until it's become a physical product that's available to sell and that is entering retailers. So it feels very daunting. I think day one, you're just like, I want to start a company. And that sentence sounds so daunting and insurmountable. But when you just break it down line by line and it's like, okay, what does that mean? What do I want to create for people? What is the product that's going to solve that? What are the features? What are the ingredients? What is the component? What is the name? When you break it down into pieces, it gets a lot more manageable. So yeah, that's been the process over 2 years. It was 2 years of research and development, and we launched in April of this year. So we've been live for 2 months now, and the team has grown. We just hired our first team member who has been with me for about a year now. She was another student at USC who came up to talk to me after I gave a talk at USC. And she started as an intern helping me with science communications and then with marketing. And now she is, fully on board and helping us take it to the next level. So it was really exciting for me to have our first hire. And we also have a team of interns that helps with everything. I could not do this by myself. So they help with everything from social media marketing to PR outreach to web design. So I'm so grateful that I've had the opportunity to go to campuses and share the mission and the vision for Biotech Beauty. And the students who resonate with this and want to contribute have, volunteered their time and given so much of their talent to help further this mission. So it's been really amazing to see over the past 2 years how it's turned from this idea of me just sitting at my laptop into something that is tangible. And, you know, we're starting to see a lot of sales and brand awareness all over the country, which I'm so happy and grateful for.
Well, you deserve it. And it's amazing. Congratulations on like your first official hire. That is a huge step. And I think, you know, hearing that whole process of just like ideating and like letting all the ideas out of your brain and putting them on paper is so important. And, you know, I saw this post today and I thought it was such a beautiful visualization, because I always tell people like, just start. It doesn't have to be perfect. And I think a lot of people try to wait till it's like the perfect idea, the perfect time, you know, they have the perfect setup and whatever. And it's like starting with something imperfect is always better, in my opinion, just like getting it out there. And it was this visualization where it was like a circle, but it was like not fully connected. It was just like kind of like a sketch of a circle filled in. And it was like having something started and then perfect it later. And then later it was like that perfect circle. I don't know if I explained the visual right, but hopefully got the point across. And yeah. I think, what is your advice for someone who is at that point, maybe, you know, in their like corporate 9-to-5 job, and they're like, I want to start something, but when is the perfect time? Like, what was your journey in that? Was it like a full halt of your like kind of corporate career, and then you were like day one of starting my own journey? Or was it more of like a mixed journey and then you kind of separated the two?
Yeah, there was a pretty clear separation. I left L'Oreal and I spent a couple months on my own, just not working and really thinking, what do I want next, right? That's when I was doing the search for, is there a makeup company that's doing skincare infused makeup? Maybe I'll apply to that. And it was in those months that I discovered there was a true gap. I knew how to fill it. And honestly, it was just this decision that you said of like, if not now, then when? If I don't do it, I fear that I'm going to enter a 9-to-5 again and just follow that ladder for the rest of my life. So I kind of told myself what you mentioned earlier of like, the industry will always be there. I need to give this a try, because I knew that this was the perfect nexus, right? Like, I had been doing market research and I'd been in the beauty industry for a while. And I knew that this is the time when microbiome focused cosmetics are coming to the forefront of consumers' minds. Skin barrier repair is a huge thing. The skinification of makeup is a huge thing. So, and obviously biotechnology and beauty is a huge thing. So I knew this was the perfect storm and I had all the tools to execute it. And I knew that if I waited, I would miss out on a pretty big opportunity. So that's when I decided, I don't have all the answers. I don't know how to start a brand. I've never done this before. Mm-hmm. But if I don't start, I think I will end up regretting it. So I love this visual that you painted of like, it's an imperfect circle. It's just kind of a rough idea. But once you have that imperfect circle and you share it, maybe not with the whole world, you don't want to just something before it's ready, but you share it with your inner circle, maybe you share it with mentors, and then they can start to help you put together the pieces and they can help you refine the vision and the mission and, you know, refine the idea so that you can keep taking it to the next step. So you don't have to know all the answers. You don't even have to know really what the idea is, but if you feel inspired to create or change something, I would kind of put down your ideas on paper and then start sharing it with your inner circle, and they can help you start to refine it. And then from there, you can feel more confident taking it to the next level.
Totally. I love that. And I think that's such great advice and inspiration for anyone who's in that kind of middle space where they're like, I have an idea, but where do I start? How do I start? And like you said, the truth is no one knows all the answers. You just have to start with something and kind of figure it out. Fake it till you make it as you go. I do have some questions from my followers. I specifically asked them if you could, you know, have a one-on-one, sit down with a female founder of a beauty brand, what would you ask them directly? So if we can do like a bit of a rapid fire through those. So someone asked, is it more difficult to get noticed or rewarded when the competition is mostly male founders in the beauty space?
Well, I think being a female founder in a space where there's a lot of male founders can come with extra challenges. There's a lot of scrutiny. I found this even before being in the beauty industry. Just, you might have experienced this, Lavinia, in classes. You might sometimes feel like you have to prove yourself a bit more than your male counterparts.
Right.
Whether it's questioning your ideas, the validity of your ideas, questioning the way you lead your team. But I think women bring a unique perspective that is invaluable, especially in beauty, having personally struggled with acne-prone skin and being an active wearer of these kinds of products. I knew that I could bring a really unique perspective to creating products that solve problems that I've lived through. So yeah, it can be challenging, but I think that's why supporting women in STEM and in beauty is such a huge passion of mine. So that's why at Biotech Beauty, we started the STEM scholarship program to help young women pursuing science and technology degrees. We know that representation in these fields drives innovation, and diverse voices lead to solutions that might otherwise be overlooked. Like if we're having, for example, men who don't wear makeup or who don't struggle with acne try to create these kinds of products, it's not going to be solved in the way that we could. So whether this is innovation in beauty or healthcare or sustainability or transportation, there's so many different aspects that STEM can be applied to that I think having the female perspective is really valuable. So women often face a tougher road securing funding and recognition. Maybe we need to prove ourselves a bit more than our male counterparts, but I think those challenges make every success even more rewarding. And then it helps open doors for others to follow. So I want to build a brand that not only delivers real results today, but also inspires the next generation of leaders to push boundaries and create change.
I love that. And I think, as you said, you know, there's skills that both male and female founders are going to bring to the table. And the two different perspectives are really valuable, but especially in creating a brand like Biotech Beauty, you know, that really your true message is finding that confidence in your skin as, you know, a girly girl who loves makeup, but still, you know, has struggled with her skin in the past. I think that is perfect. And like you said, we just have to empower other women in STEM and in entrepreneurship as a whole to really, you know, remind ourselves that we can do it just as much as the men can. Next question is from someone who was looking more at the funding aspect. So they asked, how do you have access to funding to scale? Did you have to sell shares of your company? To add on to this, let's dive deeper into maybe the start. Like you said, you were a solo founder. So did you self-fund this or did you go to raise like capital right away from the get-go?
Yeah, so the initial investment for Biotech Beauty's first production run was fully self-funded. And outside of that, we've done a lot of fundraising. For me, it's been very important to keep all of the equity within our company. So when I do fundraising, it's mostly grants. And I'm really grateful for the fact that the universities that I went to host a lot of pitch competitions and accelerators where they give away equity-free funding. So a lot of my time, honestly, is spent going back to campuses, doing pitch competitions, sharing the word about our mission and our vision and our progress. And I've been really grateful that we've received funding through those universities as well. And I want to keep it that way as long as possible. So now that we've launched, I'm really grateful that we have some money coming in and we're able to put that back into product development and marketing. And so at this time, we're not raising outside capital. And I think that that helps us make sure that this vision can remain entirely my own and my team's.
That's really interesting to hear, just because I think from a consumer's perspective, even recently with the acquisition of Rode, I had, you know, I put out a thing on Instagram and so many people were confused by the acquisition because they're like, okay, so Hailey Bieber basically got $1 billion in her bank account. And I was like, that's not how it works. So I think there is confusion there in like the industry. And, you know, yes, she is the founder, but she doesn't own like all the equity for Rode. And then that's not how acquisitions work and stuff. But I think, you know, having these conversations is really important to educate not only each other, but the consumer too, to better understand, you know, who owns the brand, who's behind it, who's running it. And I think it's really empowering too, from your perspective, to share to others who are maybe looking to start a brand, but they're like, I don't have the capital. And there are resources out there. Like you said, you just have to like spend your time and really hunt for them. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't take like that huge amount of capital to start something, and starting small and with what you have and the resources you have is super important. So thanks for being so transparent about that all. Let's switch up a little bit. And someone asked, what do you do to combat imposter syndrome? Which I think is like just part of the entrepreneur disease of just, you know, that constant feeling of you're not doing enough or you shouldn't be where you're at. So what do you do to maybe combat that? Have you felt imposter syndrome? And yeah, let's talk about it.
Absolutely. This is something I still struggle with. I think it was a lot more prevalent in the early stages of my journey because at that point, right, it's just an idea. I don't even have a product. Right. So I'm like, what am I doing? I'm telling people I'm a founder and a CEO. I just have an idea. We haven't made anything yet. And that was challenging for me for a really long time. So to combat that, I remind myself of all of the hard work, the studying, the late nights, the sacrifices I've made from having a stable job and having a stable 9-to-5 where I could maybe just turn off my brain after those work hours and enjoy my life. I've made so many sacrifices that have brought me to this point. And the idea of imposter syndrome is it's trying to convince you that you don't deserve your success. You don't deserve to be where you are. But when you take a moment to reflect on the persistence and the effort behind every step, that self-doubt starts to lose its hold on you. So I just remind myself of all of the effort that has been put in. And then I also practice gratitude, appreciating all of the opportunities that everyone has given me, suppliers who took a chance on me, the incredible team I have that took a chance on me. You know, they could have taken any internship, but they decided to give their talents to this new baby brand. And gratitude for the community that we're building in person at our pop-ups and online. I think all of this helps keep me really grounded and focused on the bigger mission of Biotech Beauty. So yeah, just try to remember the effort that you've put in that shows that you deserve to be here, and then practice gratitude for all of the things that have come along with your hard work.
Totally. And I think it's so important to sometimes take a look like from the outside in. You know, if you were to ask a close friend of yours or a family member what they think of your accomplishments, they would probably be very proud and tell you that you deserve everything that you have today. But I think we let those voices creep in of maybe the people who, you know, don't know us that well. And I don't know if you felt this too, but I know for me, I post my life online. Sometimes people see like a very short snippet of it and then take that. And then that's their perception of me. Like for example, a lot of people do see that I'm an influencer and they're like, oh, you have life on easy mode and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, at the end of the day, I'm very grateful for the job I have. I know that I'm in a very blessed position, but at the end of the day, I did put in the work to get here. And I'm very grateful that it worked out for me this way, but it didn't just like fall out of the sky into my lap. But I think that can be hard. And I remember even when I initially launched my brand, I remember getting this one comment that really stuck with me. And it was like, oh, you're just doing this to make money. And that really stuck with me because it just felt like such a hit on like who I was a person too. Cause it was like, wow, like one, just the miseducation of, you know, you start a brand and people think you just have money rolling in. It's like, that's not the reality at all. And then two, it's like, you know, they don't owe me the time to take the time to look into what I'm doing and my mission and everything. But I had to, in that moment, remind myself like, wait, okay, why am I doing this? I know who I am. I know why I'm doing this. And I know that I'm not making any money of this because I self-funded and everything like that. But how do you kind of deal with that as well? Like not only the imposter syndrome you put on yourself, but that perception from the outside of sometimes how maybe entrepreneurship or brand ownership can be glorified online in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I mean, I think you stated it perfectly of like, you know who you are and you have to be your own best friend in those moments. I do try to lean on my friends and family as much as I can in those moments where I'm just like, it hurts, honestly. If somebody says something about you that is untrue about your character and it's totally unfounded because it's based on a small video they saw online, it still hurts because it's like, oh, this is a judgment. This is, you know, totally incorrect based on our mission and everything. But I think just reminding yourself of like, I know who I am. I know what I'm doing this for. This is like one person whose opinion is totally unfounded and shouldn't carry any weight because they're not contributing to the mission. They're not contributing to bettering other people's lives through creating products or education or anything. So I try to just release it in those moments. And I'm like, it's just the internet. People will drop a comment without thinking twice. And I know who I am. Sometimes I forget who I am and I have to go to my friends. But I think, yeah, leaning on the people who know you and know all the work you've put in and what you're doing it for to help remind you in those moments is really helpful.
Yeah, no, totally. And like you said, that it is just the internet. I always talk about like energy in, energy out. Like if someone took 2 seconds to make a quick judgment on you, like let that hurt for 2 seconds, like acknowledge it. Because I think sometimes people are like, oh, just don't care. And, you know, don't, like, obviously we're humans, it's going to hurt us. But kind of the energy exchange is like, they took 2 seconds to comment it, give it 2 seconds to like feel it and then let go of it. Cause you know, they didn't take the effort to get to know you. But yeah, definitely that just comes with the journey and it's part of it. Let's switch gears to some of the last few questions, which are more, I guess, formulation based. So someone asked, is it true that most products in the US/Canada are mostly water compared to Europe?
Interesting question.
I thought this was interesting too. I was like, oh, I've never like heard this kind of come up in any conversation.
Yeah. Interesting to say like most products, because I wouldn't be able to know the split. I think maybe if they're referring to formulas in Europe being more potent.
Maybe
that's what they're saying. But right off the top of my head, no, I don't know of any trend that says like Canadian and American products are more water-based than the rest of the world.
Right. Yeah, totally. And I think too, like this comes down to like understanding formulation as well. Like at the end of the day, you know, if you have active ingredients in a product, those actives usually at are very like low percent because that's what the skin can tolerate. So then, yes, most products will end up being like a large percent water, but that just
Right.
comes down to like cosmetic formulation and
Right.
doesn't always necessarily mean that a product formulation is bad or less potent because
Right.
of that. But I mean, there are different regulations across, and I think, yeah, there's definitely going to be different ingredient uses and stuff. But yeah, I just thought that was an interesting question that someone asked. I thought I'd get your opinion on it. And then one more, someone asked, what's one beauty myth you wish more people knew were false?
Okay. Yeah. So I'll speak about one that we educate on quite a bit on our Instagram, and we try to make it very understandable because it's kind of the reason behind us using biotech in biotech beauty.
Okay.
So one beauty myth that I wish more people understood is that natural, this claim of natural beauty, natural formula, natural ingredients doesn't automatically mean it's better or that it's good for
Right.
you. Natural in cosmetics isn't regulated. It's not a regulated term. So it can mean a lot of different things, totally up to the interpretation of each brand. Often it means that the ingredients are sourced from nature and maybe not modified much from their original source, but it doesn't speak to how safe or effective they are. So, for example, some natural ingredients come from animals like shark liver oil or beetle shell pigments, which don't align with a lot of brands' vegan standards and that a lot of consumers want nowadays. And then there's the aspect of sustainability. Palm oil is natural, but it's a major driver of deforestation and habitat loss. So that's not great. And then the third aspect is so many natural ingredients or naturally occurring elements are harmful for humans. Formaldehyde, mercury, these are naturally occurring, but not safe for our skin. So this is where science and in particular biotechnology comes in to reshape beauty. We can create lab-made ingredients that mimic nature, but
Yeah.
are cleaner, safer, and more sustainable. So, for example, the squalane, which is a non-comedogenic lightweight oil that we use in all of our products, it's traditionally sourced from shark livers or olives, but at Biotech Beauty, we use a biotech version made from renewable sugarcane. So, it's better for the planet, doesn't harm animals, and it's more pure for your skin. And we've also have lab-created vegan collagen, which is inspired by jellyfish proteins, but made entirely in the lab to avoid animal sourcing. So, natural isn't always the answer. I think real progress in beauty comes from blending science and sustainability to deliver products that truly support your skin and the environment.
Totally. I started smiling when you start like just open up the conversation about natural beauty because there's nothing that like grinds my gears more than when people aren't educated on this, or even like some brands that I've, talked to that really push that like natural beauty. And I'll sometimes get emails for like PR or like a brief or something, and it's like, we are 100% natural, like no chemical free makeup and
No
skincare.
chemicals is
And I'm
crazy.
just like, oh my gosh, like if you knew you were talking to a chemical engineer, like, there's
Yeah.
no way. Like it made me giggle because, yeah, I think even I get comments like people see that I have acne, they're like, have you tried natural products? I'm like, what does that mean? What does that
Yeah.
mean? And yeah, it is funny. I mean, obviously, I think it is a very marketing term, and it kind of creates like that fear mongering in people where it's like, oh, this is a chemical free product. Like you don't want to put all these chemicals on your face, blah, blah, blah. Or my favorite, preservative free, where it's like, then your product's just going bad. Especially when it comes to sun protection and all of that. So thank you so much for speaking on that in such an eloquent way and really breaking it down for so many factors of not only, sustainability, but also skin health as well. I think that's a really important thing for people to understand. And especially if they're using products, it's important to know. Yes, I think it's important to know what's in your products, making sure it's safe for the skin, but that goes both way. And as you mentioned, natural is not always better and can lead to problems. Yeah, I think it can be used in, I think similarly, even in marketing, like the term clean, like it's not a regulated term. And what does clean beauty really, really mean? I think it's taking a deeper look at the ingredients and yeah, becoming like a more educated consumer too, to understand like what is in my products and is it working the way it should on my skin? Is it sustainable, as you mentioned? And is it actually doing what it should? And maybe there are ingredients in there that you don't want to be putting on your skin that could be considered natural or clean in some marketing ways. So yeah, thank you for speaking on that. I'm very passionate about the whole natural beauty, clean beauty topic. So I think that was a perfect way to kind of wrap this up. Before we end, I want to just ask, what is something that you love about your skin? Yeah, that was my last question.
Yeah, this is This was kind of unexpected, so I'm just going to say the first thing that comes to mind. My skin very much reminds me of my family.
I love
So
that.
it's very in particular. Like, I have very oily skin and it's a bit deeper than the rest of my siblings. And so I look a lot like my grandma. I have the same features as her and same kind of like a little bit oilier of a complexion. But she is like 89 now and she looks great. And I remember learning when I was younger, people with oilier skin types. I think age more gracefully, and I think they get less
Yeah.
sprinkles or something. So I used to like go crazy with like the witch hazel astringent, the
Right.
salicylic acid face wash, trying to tame the
Strip it all.
oiliness. But as I've yes, like stripped it all away. But as I've gotten older and I've started to appreciate like this is how my skin is and I want to nurture it as it is, I've appreciated that it reminds me of my family. It's genetic, which I think is a beautiful thing because it just reminds me of my heritage. And even the makeup that I've designed kind of leans into it. Because as you can see, like I very much lean into the dewy look now. I'm not trying to
Yeah,
hide
you're
it. I'm not a
glowing.
matte. Thank you. So yeah, that's something I love about my skin. I've just embraced the dewiness. Sometimes I look like a shiny donut, but
In a good
that's
way.
how it is.
No, I love that. I ask this question all the time. Like I say it at the end of all my content, and I've never gotten the family piece. And I love that so much. And I think all of us have kind of leaned away from that matte, like make your skin look like a like flat canvas look to embracing the glow. And now we're buying products to make us look more glowy. So it's like if you have it naturally, like totally flaunt it. And yeah, the whole aging gracefully thing. I love seeing all the posts that are like, if you're struggling with acne now, just know you're gonna age more gracefully and be great for it. So I'm like, yeah, let's look at it. It's all about a positive mindset. So I absolutely love that. One last thing that just came to mind before we go. What is your, next like few years, 5 years, whatever, 10 years, just future goals with biotech beauty? Where do you want to see it in the industry? And what's the big things that you want to make a change with moving forward? Already, adding on to maybe the change you've done already, what's next for biotech beauty?
Yeah. So I think continuing on this change that I hope to have already created within the industry, which is having brands take responsibility for doing all of the safety and marketing claims substantiation. Obviously, brands have to do it now for like very serious things. Like if you're making an acne claim, they substantiate it
Right,
if we
like
know it's
regulatory
safe.
reasons.
Exactly. Like generally safe. But for the majority of marketing claims, these are not very well substantiated. And consumers don't know that. Consumers aren't aware of the fact that beauty brands are not required to conduct clinical testing so to substantiate their marketing claims. If they do, sometimes they will do what's called consumer perception surveys, which is really just you gave the product to a bunch of people and they filled out a survey saying, I think my skin looks better. I think my complexion is clearer, but there's no instrument-based analyses, there's no statistical significance. So what I'm excited about is showing both the industry and consumers that this is very much possible and that this should be the standard so consumers don't have to do so much legwork on their own to figure out what truly works. So I'm hoping that in the next 5, 10 years, biotech beauty becomes the industry leader and creates a standard for what transparency in science education and ingredients education and claim substantiation looks like. And I want to continue creating our portfolio. So as of now, we have a lot of products coursed out for the rest of this year, which I'm so stoked about. But I want to have a full makeup collection so you can do a full complexion routine of biotech beauty products and know that it's not going to break you out and that it's going to actively repair your skin. And so that's what we're working on. In the fall of this year, we have our very first retailer launch, which hasn't been announced yet, but I'm so excited to share that with the world. And over the next couple of years, I just hope to keep expanding to retailers in the US, and then eventually within the next 5, 10 years, I would love to be international as well.
Amazing. Wow. Big plans ahead, but if anyone can do it, it'll be you. And I'm so excited to see biotech beauty grow. I'm so excited to try out the brand because, not only does it like I feel like really align with me, but also like knowing that the founder's a fellow STEM girl. Like I just love the whole message and I can't wait to play around and review it and all. But thank you so much for coming on Loud Talk with Lavi and talking to me and really being so open about your journey. Really appreciate having you here.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. This was a great conversation and so excited to stay in touch and hear what you think about the products.
Yay. Okay. Amazing. Well, that is it for this episode, guys. Hope you enjoyed. You'll hear from me in the next episode of Loud Talk Lavi. Bye, everyone.